NFL. The weather is changing, obviously, and as the weather changes, it affects all of our health. But thank God research continues. This week we're going to talk about research and what's happening, what's on the highlights, and how is it coming about. Denise, are you with us?
Yes, I am. I'm ready to go. We've got quite a few to cover, and I want people to get a paper and pencil out so that you can write down who you're going to call if you're interested in any of these studies. We do try to get the message out to everybody. I will really emphasize probably two studies, or maybe three, that I think are just fantastic. You can't miss the opportunity, and I'll explain why as we go through. So if we're ready, and if you've got paper and pencil, and we'll also have this online for you to later refer to in our archives.
Before you get on, Denise, I got a real nice email back from Dr. Matthew Reinhart, the War Injuries Clinic. He is right up there ready to help us and everything else. So I've referred him again, as you've known the emails we're participating in, that he's right there and ready to help anybody. So thank God we got him up there to help us, and hopefully he can implement all of this research to help the vets. I know that's what the aim is.
These research studies are, I'll tell you when they're funded, I'll try to tell you if they're funded by VA or if they're funded by our DOD Congressionally Directed Medical Research. The first one I'm going to tell you about is a treatment trial. We have something similar, if not same, as fibromyalgia. I think we're finding out now that we're really not like the civilian fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue. Really should be called Guffor illness because there's differences. But there's been two drugs out on the market that have never been tried on us to help us. So this is a trial to, you know, feed into that. And I'm talking about two drugs that you may have heard of. It's Cymbalta is one, and the other one is Lyrica. Now, they've never, you know, done a study on that for Gulf War vets. They want Gulf War vets that were overseas for Operation Desert Storm, okay? And you have to be willing to, you know, they're going to randomize which one you're on and if you get a placebo or what. So the randomized treatment, and you'll participate in a three-month follow-up. It's open to men and women between the ages of 38 and 70. It is going to be down in Central Texas by Killeen, Austin, Temple, or Waco. That is where they're located. The age group 38 to 40, which covers almost all the Gulf War vets that served in Desert Storm. There's some
Killeen, Texas, that's Fort Hood, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Down by Waco and Baylor, not that far from Dallas. And like I said, you'll be, you know, chosen to be in one or another treatment or a placebo. So they'll have three groups going. And then you have to come back, you know, at the end for 3 months to follow up. So they'll be measuring the effects. And what I'm going to do is I'm not going to go into a whole lot of detail of the ones that, you know, could not participate, because that's really up to the study people to pre-screen people and to, you know, tell them why they can't be accepted if they can't. But, you know, example is an active systemic infectious disease, you know, lupus, rheumatoid arthritis, scleroderma, diabetes type 2, very definitely heart disease, endocrine disorders, any strokes or TIAs, okay, or severe head trauma or MS. Those are just some of them. But the
Please
people
explain
you need
to
call,
what some of these mean in layman's terms, Denise.
Well, basically, if you've, you know, got diagnosed illnesses and they're pretty severe, but when you call this person, they will interview you. They will be asking you a series of questions, and that's what we call pre-screening, to see if you're acceptable to the study. Okay? The person to contact is Dena, D-E-N-A, Davidson, just the way it sounds, Dina Davidson. And the phone number is 254-297-5169. I'll repeat the number again. 254-297-5169.
Do they have a website?
It doesn't have a website, dear. I've got an email. They can email the person, which is dina.davidson@va.gov. dina.davidson@va.gov. The best way is to call them because they're going to need to talk to you in person and to go through, you know, your questions. They're going to explain the study to you in more detail. They're going to go through the questions they need to ask you of if you have any diagnoses that, you know, would prevent you from participating. Now, they started the study in June, okay, so we're already into it. They want to get at least 180 veterans. So they notified me and wanted me to publicize it, so that's what I'm doing. And that's down in Texas, and like I said, I forgot to ask her if you can do it long distance in Texas. I mean, if you can get the medications, you know, and then come back at 3 months in person. So people, you need to call in, ask all those questions. This is a good study of a drug that's been used for fibromyalgia. Some people have gotten on it, and, you know, just by getting a prescription, and it's helped them with their pain. So we're looking at pain and sleep problems here, okay?
Cymbalta and Lyrica also have been used for PTSD because they're very effective in some of those areas also, haven't they?
Yes, they have been. Okay, the next study that I'm beating the drums. This is important, people. This is breakthrough study. We have our first consortium study funded and up and running. It's a consortium is a group of universities working together in different sites. This is the first one, and it's funded through DOD, Congressionally Directed Medical Research. Now, there's three sites. One of them won't come online until a year from now, but Boston, Miami, and a year from now, Texas, which will be in Waco area. They will do, they'll do a pre-screen. I'll give you the number to call and talk to Joanne. And her number is 617-638-5834. That's 617-638-5834. Now, we've been talking about biomarkers, okay? This is the biggie, guys. We need 300 participants. They want 175 in Boston. They're waiting for your calls, okay? Boston and Miami are up and running, but let me explain. Boston, if you go there, it's Dr. Sullivan's location at Boston University College of Medicine. They will pre-screen you, accept you into the study, okay? And they are going to bring you in, take blood samples, take sputum. They will also, in Boston location only, they will do scans. And it's like an hour of scans.
They will do what?
They'll do the brain scans.
Oh, okay.
Part of it. But that's the only location. They're going to use the same machine. So, you know, if you want the whole bucket, go to Boston. And they basically will do a little physical with you. They do neuropsych testing when you're there, take the blood. There's two sets of questionnaires that are on the computer. You can do it while you're there, or if you run out of time and you need to travel, you can do it electronically when you get home, okay? There is no money budgeted for travel, but you will get $100 at least to help. Now, what I'm telling people is there is an organization, and you need at least 2 weeks' notice, and I have Dr. Sullivan coordinating with this group to let them know what we're doing. But it's called aircompassionforveterans.org. And when we have studies like this, we reach out and get them notified about the study, that they don't have travel funds. And this is a group of veterans that fly commercially with commercial airlines. So they try to reach out and help fellow vets. So if you contact them with at least 2 weeks' notice, they're going to try to help get you an airline ticket. This study will only take four and a half hours max, okay? I went and did it. I got up there on an early bird flight. I was headed back to the airport by 3 o'clock, okay? And basically it was going to be 9 to 2:30. So it's doable in a day. You don't have to get a hotel room unless you're coming from the West Coast. Then, yeah, you're going to have to get a hotel room.
Boston has got an incredible stuff, history, all kinds of things to see up there anyhow if you get up in that area.
It's great. Now, one of the things, the other thing you can do is if you get approved for the study, you know, you contact the Air Compassion for Veterans, you can also set up a FundMe site and explain that you're going for research for Gulf War illness. And where you're going, you price out what the cheapest ticket would be and put that as your fundraising. You can also check with local VFW posts, your DAV post, your American Legion, any of the service organizations. And you can take a printout of, you know, what the study's doing and ask them to help get you there. A lot of the individual posts, if they can afford it, they'll help. You know, it's a, you know, it's a one-time thing. So, you know, there are ways to do it. And then if everything falls through, you can always send me an email at dsnurse@aol.com, and we'll see what we can do to help. We've been doing some creative things. I mean, we've had people, when they wanted to go to the Research Advisory Committee meeting, I had a mother and a daughter that sat out and had a car wash. They raised the money for their trip. So, you know, you got to be creative. But we can do this, and this is the one that we're looking for biomarkers. The blood, they'll keep some of it in Boston for their basic things they do. On basic clinical tests, they'll get you the results on that. The research is research, you know. We'll get it when it's finalized and when it's reported out and published. Now, some of the blood goes down to Dr. Klimas. She has recruited a team down there to beat all teams. I mean, we've got a Canadian person with the computer modeling that'll be just there, you know, ready for the biomarker work. So some of it will be shipped to Dr. Klimas. So she's part of the study with Nova Southeast down there. The sputum will be sent to Australia to be biomarkered work in Australia. So this is, you know, a study that's involving four locations, Texas in a year from now, but Boston, Miami. Your sample will be going to Australia, to the University of Adelaide, I think it is. And this is a big study. They want, you know, a lot of people in it. They are wanting a total of 300. If they get more, I'm sure they'll take them.
Can you explain what a biomarker is, Denise, for those that might be not medically inclined?
Basically, in common language, you know, we're looking for markers that will show up in the blood or the sputum that will, you know, kind of be different from any other biomarker that's out there. It helps to try to locate that. That's a lot of hard work. And they'll have to weed out some diagnosed illnesses that you won't be allowed to participate, because if you include people with diagnosed illnesses, it makes it just that much more time involved, effort involved to separate biomarkers that we know belong to a diagnosed illness versus the undiagnosed stuff, the multi-symptom chronic illness that we have is Gulf War. Okay,
and basically a biomarker, we could see an alteration or a different numbers in the quantity and types of blood cells, the shape of the blood cells, how much nutrients or anything they can get in, correct?
Right. The end result is with biomarkers. Then they can look at drugs that are already on the shelf that might be useful. Okay? Or we might have to go to developing drugs. Hopefully we find some drugs off the shelf that are useful. But it's really, it's cutting-edge work when you get the biomarkers. Okay? So, the phone number again, I'll give you a phone number and an email. Joanna, and her last name is Cirillo, C-I-R-I-L-L-O.
Spell that again.
Phone, C-I-R-I-L-L-O. And I want y'all to call. It's much easier to call and get in touch with her directly to go through the pre-screen. 617-638-5834. I'll repeat that. 617-638-5834.
Now, it seems if we were able to get a biomarker, I mean, that's the kind of the golden grail of all this stuff, because if we come up with a specific biomarker that can be direct correlation between a medical problem, then they can go out there and find those biomarkers, do a fast, rapid diagnosis, and then with those biomarkers, if they have a drug that's available to reduce the effects of those biomarkers, we're in a win-win-win situation, aren't we?
Yeah. I'm not talking so much for a cure. I'm talking for a really targeted treatment. The other thing is, you know, you prove with biomarkers, you prove with the scans, we're proving our bodies are damaged. One of the first things I said when I went to D.C., one of the first conferences I went to was the health consequences of the Persian Gulf War. And, of course, everybody was denying we had any exposures, and we had the dog and pony show, as I call it. I stood up and I said, listen, y'all can play this dog and pony show. We're not happy with you. But the proof is in our body. And that's exactly where we've turned. That's why we've turned to getting good research, getting the best researchers we can involved, and constantly on the lookout for other ones that we can recruit. So this is important. We're going to prove our case, people. And, you know, if you cannot participate and you're a veteran, please reach out. Help pass the word. Help recruit others that can, okay? This is big. It's important. This is the first time we had a consortium-type study, okay? So I'm jumping up and down on that one. I want you involved, people. We need you. Now, the next one is not actively recruiting, but it's a study that was done before, got funding coming down the pike at them, and what I want to do is I want to get people calling and leaving their name, phone number, who they are, little details, because it's got to be Gulf War vets again that were in Operation Desert Storm overseas in theater. But it's Dr. Baronic with the Georgetown. He's going to do more of the SMRI with diffusion tensor technology. He did this before with 31 Gulf War vets and had controls and was reported out about 2 years ago. It showed a fiber network that was broken in the white brain matter. So we did it for 31. That's kind of a small group. So we went back for more funding, and we're going to get more of them done. We need more of these to show that this is not just some freak accident, you know, that we get a sufficient number that it qualifies as sufficiently populated in research to believe it, you know.
It seems like the connection that Bronick is doing with the brain, again, ties back into Bob's work in Texas, doesn't it?
Well, they're different scans. They're totally different scans. They each show something a little different ways, okay? But Dr. Bronick is, you know, also in the game plan for looking at some biomarkers. So, you know, he's top of, I mean, I have my top researchers, like, you know, pushing the Boston study. You really want to get up to Georgetown, people. They have you stay on a floor in the hospital so you don't have to worry about housing. They feed you. You do have to get there, but again, we can use try to use Air Compassion for Veterans. You know, put up a FundMe site, try the DAV, VFW, local post, and see if they'll help. But listen, we're making a wait list because what I figure is this is going to happen. And we want him to have people that have contacted him. He's got a list. When they get the green light, they can immediately start calling people. We can have this study populated in a hurry. We're going to have the waiting list, in other words, okay? So you'll call, give your name, phone number. They may pick up the phone. You might want to talk to them a little bit. But mainly we're making a waiting list for them so it's ready to go when they get the final green light. And that phone number that you'll call is 202-687-8231.
How do you spell
again,
Dr. Bronick?
Oh, boy. B-A-R-N-A-U-C-K. I believe. The phone number again, 202-687-8231. You can also email them with your name that you were Gulf War deployed. You can tell them the unit where you were at, that your Operation Desert Storm. Give them your phone number, your email address. Tell them you want in the study. Okay, so you can use this email, and it's all capital letters. The whole thing is all capital letters, all together, okay? So it's GWI Research, spelled out, but it's all together, GWI Research at Georgetown.edu. So that's all capital letters. Let me repeat that, GWI Research, it's all together, all caps, at Georgetown, all caps, .edu, all caps.
Now, you've been up to Georgetown and participated with Dr. Bronick already, haven't you?
I have done his spinal tap study that he's still working to get out and published. I did the other study with the scans, the fMRI-DT. So, and in fact, I kind of recruited him. I've always got my nose into research abstracts and papers. And I saw what he was doing with a Sicilian chronic fatigue with a spinal proteomics. And I went, wow, this is fantastic. We need this. So I made a call and found out if he would talk, if I got him invited to the Research Advisory Committee for Gulf War Illness Research. I called Mr. Benz, told him about him. I said, you got to have him come present what he's done with civilian chronic fatigue. He did that. We got him involved with putting in for funding through the DOD Congressionally Directed Medical Research Program. This man, I don't know when he sleeps. He is so dedicated to us. I just cannot say enough for him. Our other researchers are great. But when you get up there, you'll find out how he goes above and beyond. You're going to be there. He's going to come in the evening hours and spend 3 hours, you know, doing an assessment and interviewing you. You'll get plenty of time to talk to him, ask questions. I mean, the individual time he gives everybody. And it's like Dr. Klimas. Dr. Klimas had been an HIV researcher when they got that all solved with medication. She went with civilian chronic fatigue, and then because she was also working over at the VA Miami, she, you know, saw us coming in and took us home. That's got four illness. And then she had a clinic at University of Miami. Well, Nova Southeast offered her the world, And so she changed from University of Miami to Nova Southeast. And a lot of our researchers have been involved with trying to find answers for these perplexing problems. So they know what we're going through. And I just can't say enough that they've reached out and gotten involved with us.
I think now, one of the things that's happened over the years, everybody has tried to find that magic bullet or something that caused it and one treatment or something that's going to cure it all. And as we've said over and over again from day one, as we knew from day one when we started teaching it, there was no one thing that happened. There is no one thing that's going to cure it if we can get a cure. But in medicine,
right.
the biomarkers, you know, like you go out and take your blood pressure, you take your pulse, you take your respiration. Well, these are essentially biomarkers, but at the same time, we have biomarkers that can determine by using all these different tests. So they find what we call aberrations in the blood, or they find aberrations in the cells of the in the cell itself or something else. And if we can identify these biomarkers and get a direct correlation between the exposure and the health effect as a, you know, sign or symptom is, and then the doctors can jump right in this and start figuring out what to need to cure it. I think that's about the easiest way to explain it, isn't it, Denise?
Yeah, it sure is. I've got some more studies, so we got to keep rolling, Doug.
Okay.
Okay. I, you know, triggered a discussion from my critical care and observation skills and having Gulf War vets that had nosebleeds, bleeding gums, you know, females, their cycles were uncontrollable. And I identified with something I had seen in the acute critical care setting that was a very acute situation. But, you know, this was more of a chronic low level. And it's called hypercoagulation. We put out studies. We did one independently. And from that, getting it published, they assign it to a reviewer that's an expert. Well, lo and behold, I, you know, all of a sudden I kept mentioning this at every meeting, and I finally saw on the VA sheet they funded Dr. Ron Bach at Minneapolis VA to do work on hypercoagulation. I immediately, when I got home, looked him up, called him, got to talking to him. He never told me this until he came to Boston to present at the RAC meeting, another one that I make the, you know, do the matchmaking, I guess you would call it. But he came and he initially started talking about me. And I'm going, what are you doing there? You know, you're supposed to be presenting your thoughts on this and all. Well, it ends up that how he had gotten involved was he was the assigned reviewer for our independent study we did back in 1999, 2000. And so he took up the work from there. He's had other studies that have been done. Well, we're now to the point that he's going to try a treatment trial, trying to use an anti-inflammatory drug, prednisone, to see if that affects, you know, the inflammation that is being shown in our symptoms, in our body, in our peripheral blood. So he'll be doing a trial with prednisone. And
now, we know prednisone directly has a really positive effect on the inflammation process because I know the VA, the military, put me on it for a long time, and it definitely kept everything under control. I mean, it's
right.
A drug that definitely works, but it does have some risks, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. Again, they'll have to pre-screen you. They're looking for 100 veterans, okay? And their very, you know, start date was July, so we're finally getting the notice that we can get it out there and push and help get people there. And it's a medicine that you'll take orally as directed in the evening with some food, and it's the delayed-release prednisone, okay? So it's delayed release, and it will be for 8 weeks, okay? They will also have the placebo group, again, for 8 weeks. So this is what it's working on, to see if it will help the inflammatory nature of our illness, particularly the blood coagulation.
Now, the blood coagulation, I mean, you started screaming on this day one, and you did the initial research on hypercoagulation. But what we're seeing is the young kids, they get clotting. In other words, the blood turns into a thick syrup, and they get a clot of some type. And this is where we're seeing some of these young kids stroking out or having cardiac arrest when there shouldn't have been any reason for it.
Well,
and the hypercoagulation is kind of the key to that, isn't it?
You get pulmonary emboli, you can get stroke, you can get cardiac problems, you can have deep vein thrombosis. I was also talking to him that this also kind of leans toward diabetes and other things. So it's really critical that we fill these slots and see if this prednisone, blinded study, because they'll have a placebo group. But it's really, gosh, it's one I'm jumping up and down about. I got about three of them. I'm jumping up and down going, please, please get into these. You know, these are important. They're critical. Not putting down the Texas study with the fibromyalgia drug. You can get that prescribed to you. I mean, we do need to do the research, and we need to populate that study. Leah Steele helped get those researchers involved to do that.
But on the hypercoagulation, I mean, elderly and everybody are common to this thing, again, with the cardiac and again, for the arterial stuff. And heparin and warfarin were two of the drugs, again, that are blood thinners to prevent hypercoagulation. But it seems like if we get prednisone, which controls the entire implementation process, could really be a breakthrough.
Now, some people got put on Coumadin, which really was not as good as heparin, because heparin, a low-dose heparin, has an anti-inflammatory portion to that drug, which Coumadin does not. Okay? And none of this altered bleeding times or anything because the dosage was low. But we're going to try this prednisone now as a treatment. Now, let me give you the contact people, please. Telephone number for Rebecca Rudquist, Rudquist. And she can also be reached by email, Rebecca Rudquist, Rudquist, small letters, rebecca.rudquist@va.gov. And her phone number is 612-467-6351. I'll repeat, 612-467-6351. Now, the second contact is Susan Johnson, Johnson. Susan with Susan. Again, susan.johnson and the number 4 at va.gov if you want to email them. But the phone number, 612-629-7492. I'm going to give that one again, 612-629-7492.
I mean,
we
have two
contacts.
Hypercoagulation study in Minneapolis, right?
Yes, it's in VA Minneapolis. Very good place. There are good people up there. And I'm just thrilled. I'm tickled pink that we're getting to the point that he's done further studies that took the hypercoagulation, had some more proof, and that we're finally to the point of trying a treatment with prednisone. I think this will really help. You know, people, you walk around and you think you're okay. Well, you might be short of breath, and maybe because your blood's thick and the oxygen can't get to where it needs to go. So some of the respiratory problems can be, you know, could be possibly related to this. Besides hazardous things like pulmonary emboli, that can kill you. We've had people on the radio show previously that had that happen. They luckily lived. The early age heart attacks. I mean, I was a cardiovascular critical care nurse at heart. And we looked at what was called DIC, disseminated intravascular coagulation, which is the acute form that you may see in a surgical ICU. And it just struck me when I started seeing this in my fellow vets and sometimes in myself, and I said, oh, my God, no one's looking at this. And luckily, you know, when we went to the CDC conference, I sat there and shared my observations, and I said, this needs to be looked into. And we initially connected with Dr. David Berg, who had done work with chronic fatigue with hypercoagulation and previously had dealt with it with OBGYN patients. Okay? So we had somebody waiting in the wings that Dr. Hanna knew. We got it together, you know? A freak accident of everything coming together at the right time, the right people. And then to have Dr. Ron Bogg be our reviewer for our published paper, just, you know, I'm delighted. Every time I see something coming, you know, coming in with a treatment besides what we could do with low-dose heparin, possibly the Coumadin, which I really didn't like people getting on Coumadin because it didn't have that anti-inflammatory. And in fact, I had to dig through a lot of literature on heparin to find out that it did have some anti-inflammatory characteristics. I didn't know that until I did some real deep digging, and I didn't find it on Coumadin. So the prednisone makes pretty good sense to me. It may help a lot of issues besides the hypercoagulation.
I know from a Berg study that I got involved, I was both on prednisone and on the heparin, and it did make a difference. I mean, and it just, you know, kept things going a lot longer than anticipated. That was for sure.
So we've got some dynamic studies. I'm scanning down to see what else I have to cover. We've covered the one in Texas. We've with the Cymbalta and Lyrica. We've covered the one to get on the wait list to go to Georgetown. We want you in that study. You will never regret going. You will never regret it. I tell you, with that one, every person that have got up there, they are so thrilled that they had time, that they know Dr. Bronick. Because, I mean, the other researchers are great. Nothing against them. It's just that there are some people that are just more one-on-one, and Dr. Bronick does that, and it makes a tremendous difference. You understand a lot more when you go through it and ask questions, and, you know, I can't say enough about Dr. Bronick. I don't know where he ever sleeps. I always worry about him because he travels and presents overseas, and he's doing chronic fatigue at the same time. Getting funding for that. I mean, he's a busy man. We've talked about the consortium study.
When we're doing research, I mean, obviously we got the active ingredient and we have a placebo. Maybe you could explain how these work and why they're important and why the researchers use this technique.
Well, you have to have the placebo so that you kind of have a control. You know, you don't know if you're going to get the placebo or the real thing.
And a placebo, you know, is not the active ingredient. It could be anything else that you think it might be. So we're looking at
it. It's going to be labeled. It's going to look as much like the other pill. They make it up special to make it look like the other pill that you take. And it's done that way so that you don't know. You don't have any preconceived ideas. You can't say, oh, I'm feeling better. I know I'm on the prednisone. Not necessarily. You know, sometimes we have the placebo effect of they think they're, you know, getting the real thing and they're not. You know, it's just their mind wanting it to happen so bad. Okay? So, you know, and you'll be in, you will not be told. And you go and take it as ordered. And, you know, they'll take all their measurements that they're going to do. And then usually, most of the time, they'll have a switch-out time, you know, so if you got the placebo, you'll switch and get the other. You'll find out all about that when you call them. They'll go into very much detail. I've given you the basic outline. But there's some, you know, in every study there's inclusion people, which in our case it's the Operation Desert Storm in theater, okay, 1991. It's that you have all these Gulf War illness symptoms. You don't have to have all of them, but a significant amount. You'll be ruled out if there's any safety reason that, you know, it was just not safe. Because when they line these studies up, it's either for safety reasons or, like on the biomarkers, if we had people with diagnosed illness in there, when we get all this blood, we have to say, oh, we've got some diagnosed illness. We got to look for whatever biomarkers they may show up and put them aside, you know? It just takes more time, more effort, more cost, okay? And so, you know, there's going to be some that, you know, will not be accepted into the program. And that's the reason. Sometimes it's a safety reason. Sometimes it's because of what we're doing that we can't mix in other stuff. So, I mean, I'm looking at about 20 minutes left in the show, Doug.
Yeah.
We're going to have more studies coming out. I think we've covered enough for today.
I really
want to encourage
people. I mean, for you and I, this is one of those things that's come up. Again, it hit the Internet a little while ago that the Secretary of Defense was having a major conversation, a major discussion on decision to incorporate women into combat. Now, for the medical arena, all of those in the medical, all the women and the men have been together, you know, inseparable forever and ever and ever. I mean, we've never seen any difference.
But how does this all come to play
for real in a real combat environment? I mean, the women have very specific things that could interfere. At the same time, they can have better skills than a male can.
Yeah. We've had military-serving women. We've had helicopter pilots. We've had fighter pilots. We've had all that in the Air Force. The only difference here is the really elite programs, be it the Rangers. And we just had two females complete it. Took them, you know, second time around. There's a third one that should have been completed shortly. So we've had three. That's not bad. And they're really rechecking to be sure that they weren't given any privileges, any leeway that the males did not get. But they are able to do it. Now we've got the Marines have already been speaking up. You know, he's been over in Iraq and Afghanistan. He said, I've had women die. We've had women dying in the war since the Gulf War.
We've had women nurses die in Vietnam. I mean, we both know them, so, and those that died after they came back, I mean, good friends of ours.
And let's go back to World War II, the nurses that were captured.
In the Philippines.
There is a history here that goes back years, and it's time to break those ceilings. If you can hit the standards, if you can make the demanding course that you have to go through to become a ranger or any special forces, you got to knock down the doors and make it open.
And I think the thing that bothers us, it's hard for people to understand, is when they think male and female, somehow they start thinking of John Wayne Rambo, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger versus a woman. But the physiological difference and the physiological ability between a male and a female are not that distinct, because you can have a male, again, who may be absolutely totally unable to do any of this stuff, and have another female that can run cycles all around Rambo. I mean, that's just part of reality, isn't it? But the psychological impact has been where the roadblock has been, isn't it?
Yeah, and, you know, it's, you know, opening the field to the special forces, and they've been very guarded and very slow. We've progressed slowly, breaking down each barrier as we went, from female pilots to all kinds of jobs, not just nurses, you know. Don't put down my nurses or doctors. I mean, we had a flight surgeon that got killed in the first Gulf War. You know, out doing her job. And so it is time. We have had females awarded the Bronze Star. The awards are coming, but you got to knock down the rest of the doors and make it equal opportunity. And some people are totally against it. Some of the men don't want it. But, you know, we had that in pilots, female pilots. They had to prove themselves, and they did it.
When we look at over the years, I mean, it's just an understanding. But I think when we're going to war with the American public, and I think just that whole thing has been brought up, you know, the woman's for motherhood and raising children and not going to war. But that's kind of an individual choice and an individual ability. I mean, I know in Desert Storm, some of the medical females I had were absolutely incredible. I sure don't want to run into them when they're pissed.
Well, let's go back to Civil War and Revolution. They dressed up like men and went and served.
Yeah, they did, didn't they?
Yes, they did.
I mean, when you first went in, I mean, man, that's over 40 years ago, but you went strictly into the nursing. What was the attitudes during the Vietnam War?
I was in during the time that the first female were going to go to flight school. And I had an opportunity, but I had things happen that interfered. So I didn't go for it, but I sure look back and go, oh, my, I love flying. I have private pilot's license. It was just a difficult time. I mean, I had a father that stroked and laid there forever. Just had things happening in my personal life that I just felt like it wasn't the time, even though
I had ended up in medevac anyhow, so you were flying all over creation to begin with.
I ended up with a reserve general that was backing me up, and he probably got upset at me when I said, nope, we're not going that way. But
I remember when Desert Storm started and you guys all arrived, we were doing that initial training, and you and I didn't know each other, even though we were in the same room and teaching, is that as you move forward, I mean, you're sitting there with your medevac unit right on, up in the tap line, right on the Iraqi border. I mean, you can't get any closer to bad news than that.
Well, and we had airvac staging facilities that were supposed to jump forward. And the war went so fast, they never jumped forward. They were held in reserve at KKMC and probably at King Fahd, too. I know ours was held back at KKMC, and they ended up helping, you know, there with the tactical and strategic blending together. So they were used that way. But, yeah, we would have had people in my unit, and, in fact, let me brag a little bit. I have a reunion of my 32nd AEG out of Kelly. It's now changed, whatever it's called now. But I had the honor to have med techs starting out, you know, flat out of basic, and they were go-getters. They worked on their degrees. We had two of them that came into basic together as airmen, came over to our reserve unit. They retired about a year and a half ago together because they came in together. Colonels, full bird colonels. had quite a few of that happened. I have a dear friend that was a med tech, and she got her nursing degree. She's still working, but she went over after Desert Storm serving there. She stayed in. She went to Iraq and Afghanistan, and quite a few of them did. Quite a few of them helped with the Katrina over in New Orleans, and they were valuable people. They got all kinds of awards and decorations and accolades. It was a good group of people that just never stopped learning, had objectives in their life, and used everything they had to get their education further and get commissioned and go further. So,
I think I'm remembering the story when I remember when you arrived in Desert Storm that night. I mean, you arrived landing on a tarmac there at the airfield in Riyadh during a Scud attack, didn't you?
Exactly. Welcome to the war.
Yeah, and then you moved over to the terminal and before you moved forward. So, I mean, the
it was
same
like
thing.
Every,
the Scuds were raining in
every
you
eight,
when we were
I
Riyadh.
Think
the Scuds were raining in you on the KKMC. They were raining in on you when you up to Iraq. And one thing we know, again, with the same thing, the doctors and the nurses, and we know perfectly with yourself, I mean, you got cross-contaminated just from the stuff that blew in the wind, and you actually got cross-contaminated, confirmed, from treating the casualties and the equipment came back.
Yeah, and cleaning the equipment to get it back home, which a lot of it, now we know we should have left it there. But, yeah, and we've, one of the doctors that was there from the Chicago unit of the Air Evac Squadron, in fact, died in a strange accident. And I can't rule it out that he probably had some symptoms and just didn't pay attention. The medical people were not told any more than anybody else. We'd have alarms go off, and then they'd tell us, oh, false alarm. you know, so we, that's a crime. That's a crime. They did not tell their
medical people. I think for the people to really understand the women, I mean, you and I both, and I know she was a really close friend of yours, Denise, and she wrote the thing home before morning. Maybe you could tell about that Vietnam War nurse, our hero, and a little about what she learned and how she made an impact in changing everything.
There was quite a few Vietnam vet nurses that stood out in my mind. Are we talking about Linda?
Yeah,
Linda wrote the book, Home Before Dawn. I got that book. I still have it. Linda's died now, I understand, probably from Agent Orange. But there was quite a few Vietnam female nurses that I met during my time, and I looked up to them, you know. I was younger. They were older at that time. But I met a lot of them when I started going forward on the Gulf War. I met some of them by going to Agent Orange meetings. And I'm sorry, but I gave them a little hard time of why didn't y'all push harder for the Agent Orange. And I have been looking and recruiting, you know, any medical personnel, be it a combat medic, EMTs, nurses, doctors. Man, if you served there with us, please get in touch with me, dsnurse@aol.com, because we've got a handful of us nurses, two in particular, that are working our tails off trying to help our fellow vet come up with ways to push the VA to do better. Got one that was basically emergency room type nurse. She had gotten 1 year of medical school under her belt by the time she got called up. She is a delight. We're two really strong-willed people being nurses. And sometimes we have our little differences, but we settle it and we move on because we've got a job to do. Even though we're not on duty, we're not being paid by anybody, she woke up much later to the situation, but has speedily got up to course. She's making a difference over in Kansas, Missouri area. I'm looking for my other nurses to step forward. We need you.
And we had a Navy commander. There was a hospital commander, and she's been right in the forefront of helping everybody forever and ever and ever.
Yeah, Julie Dykman, Fleet Hospital 5, I think it was, has had her own health problems significantly. Lost her house so far, she ended up being blown out a second-floor window, so she's still recovering from that, but she's very definitely with us. Carol Williams was MedTech, and we've had her on the program before, has had health problems also. So
yeah.
We do know others, but sometimes their health keeps them from being as actively involved as we need. And sorry, guys, I'm getting older, and I'm wearing my body out by doing all the extra, you know, making it and doing these things. And I feel an obligation to find researchers for us, to get them involved. I feel an obligation when they get a good study that I go and participate. It's kind of like being the point man, the lead person. Follow me. If I'm willing to get there and do it, and I value it that much, hopefully they get the idea. And I have done the Bronic study. It's a repeat and just getting more numbers. I've done the Boston study now. I diverted I got through with the RAC meeting, which was a one-day meeting last week, and we had quite a number. We had about 20 vets, two daughters and a wife come. We had two from overseas, England, and one that lives in Ireland, but he represents the Australian vets. There was a pitch-in effort by a couple of people, not me. I didn't get contacted. But they got their tickets to get them over here to present at the RAC, because what they have found, by chance, and it was a miracle, I think, for the British, but they really haven't had any funded research except for government research that is kind of like, you know, what we've dealt with that kind of puts us down and doesn't acknowledge or, you know, whatever. But they found that they had, for a rare disease, which is basically, if you look up, hypopituitary, and they use the gold standard insulin stress test over there. For us, it's the insulin tolerance test. And they
found, our time is up, Denise. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. We'll continue on with our conversations, information. All this information on how to get in these projects will be up on the website shortly. Thank you and good evening. Thank you, Denise.
Thank you. Bye.